case in our calendar is 97-11-30, State of Ohio versus James Goff. Mr. Krim.
Jurisdiction.
Yes. I would like to discuss with you three aspects of the instructions that were given on the sentencing of Mr. Goff. The issue of unanimity, the injection by the court of the fact that Mr. Goff did not want injected as a mitigating factor, and finally the definition of the mitigating factor, or rather the absence of the definition. Instructions for the judge told the jury, we shall recommend that only if unanimously find by proof beyond reasonable doubt that the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors. If you do not so find, you shall unanimously sign the verdict for a better sentence of life with parole eligibility after serving 24 years in prison, or a sentence of life with parole eligibility after serving 34 years in prison. This jury was never told that if they did not agree what they should do. They were told, in fact, that they had to act unanimously, given, in essence, three options.
With Belton?
I'm sorry, Sonny,
Belton, isn't that ultimately what they have to do? This charge is not that far from what you would have given as a perfect charge. Is it that they're not told that they have to unanimously agree that death is, or that death is not being imposed.
But they were told that, you know, they also had to agree that they had to unanimously find the rest. And in fact, if they did not unanimously agree on death, there was another option. If they could go to the lesser included of the sentence of life without unanimously agreeing that that was what they had to do.
I read that, how you laid that out, and I'm having a hard time understanding what it is that you sent the trial that it should have done.
Well, I believe the trial that it should have done what we requested, and what I believe other courts have done in several situations, and instructed if you were unable to agree in the answer that the death sentence is appropriate under the standard of proof, you are to proceed to consider which of the life sentences will be served. That was what we asked the judge to charge, and the judge did not charge that.
Well, he said if you would, let's go back over to the charge. What respect does it give?
It does not inform them what they're to do if they do not agree to the answers. In other words, the only thing that they were told how to function was if they all fell asleep. If you unanimously find a group of aggravating services, then you can come to the death sentence. And then if you do not so find, you shall unanimously sign the word for life. So they're not told what to do. Some people said
decide on how.
I have a hard time understanding. It seems to me what you're talking about is a distinction without a real difference here. They're told you don't, if you can't unanimously agree on death, then you've got to unanimously agree on all the other two options.
Mm-hmm. But they're told only what they can do if they all 12 agree unanimously. And in the area, of capital sentencing, you will assume that the individual juror is different. That's the whole point, and that's the whole Bureau of Justice of Maryland. And here, the jury is on a point. And that we ask for that instruction, not because it was an accurate statement of the law, it was not covered elsewhere.
From the briefing here, the whole focus, or the primary focus, is imposition of the death sentence, not the guilt phase.
Right, I don't believe there's an assignment there that would be related to the
conviction. Well, your question is a conviction for grand theft.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, you're right. You did challenge the sufficiency of evidence.
So we're down to mitigation and the question of whether or not the death penalty is the appropriate sentence and or whether the charge to the jury was correct. Would, assuming your argument is well taken, would the outcome have been any different even if there had been that charge? I mean, given the overwhelming evidence here, the fact that the lady was 88 years old when he murdered her.
I believe that the harmless error argument is what the jury was told to inform the way, not the aggravating circumstances versus the mitigating factors. And mitigating factors in this case bring in a total existence. The product really of the child, not the child welfare system, but he was removing his mother and that's the way it was. So the jury had to balance those things off against each other, and I don't think that, I think that the jury would have instructed was on my fault.
How would the specific instruction about which you complain relate directly to his bad childhood versus the aggravating circumstances of the brutal way in which he committed this murder?
I think it goes to the ability of a single juror to say, this is why you should be on the death penalty. And a single juror, given the instruction of unanimity, as I think the court indicated in Brooks' case, that willingness to stand alone would have been a simple way to this kind of injunction. Making your decision against consider all the evidence, the arguments of counsel, and all other information, and all other reports which are relevant to the nature and circumstances of aggravated circumstances, or to any mitigating factors, including but not limited to the nature and circumstances of the events. So the jury was told the first thing they were supposed to do in the mitigation process was to determine the first mitigating factor they were to balance at the end. The aggravating circumstances was the nature and circumstances of the offense. And we had asked the judge not to give such an instruction. However, he went ahead and gave that instruction. So as the jury began its deliberations on mitigating factors, they had to balance, those were balanced. The nature and circumstances were not something that Mr. Long wanted them to consider. They could balance off against the aggravated circumstances. They simply created there was nothing balanced. These were bad facts for my client. And the mitigation process, the defendant is the one who has control. And it is up to the defendant to interject mitigating factors. That's the lesson. Which is the basis for my present statute.
Did the trial judge recite all the mitigating factors from the statute? He didn't.
What he did was he went as follows. I stopped at that first factor. They're not limited to history and character, but then he went on and enumerated three: the history and character and background of the defendant, the youth of the defendant, any other factors that are relevant to the issue of whether the defendant should be sentenced to death.
And then put in the nature and circumstances. Where did that come in this?
The nature and circumstances came in at the beginning.
Very beginning. Okay.
So the first thing we look at
the mm-hmm. I mean, there, obviously, do you acknowledge that that is a factor to be considered in mitigation? And you're just saying it was so obviously inapplicable in this case that the court should not have raised it?
What I'm saying is you're giving the jury a list that the defendant has interjected in the process for his benefit. You can't start that list off with the nature and circumstances of the defense. And that's what happened here. That's the way that instruction is given.
Your argument then has to be that, you know, it's got to be pretty subtle, that because they're entitled to consider that if there is anything mitigating in the nature and circumstances, and in effect, what you're saying is the judge told them to consider that, and that probably tainted them, even though. What they'd have to decide, in your view, is they'd have to decide that there is nothing mitigating in the nature and circumstances of the offense, and therefore move on to the next three that were listed by the judge.
What I'm saying is the process by that time has been so overshadowed by that, because they were said there are four things to consider. The first one is one that is very negative.
And each are, yeah, okay, but it is subtle because each of those things the jury is asked to weigh, whether or not they find it is inappropriate, if it's mitigating. And so the first one, you say it's difficult because the first one they would have right off said, well, there's nothing mitigating in the nature and circumstances. And that, but they nevertheless were told to go on to the ones that do apply. Okay.
What I'm saying is that they should never be told that they were to balance that off when given the things that the mediation. I'm not saying that they consider that in the mediation process. But that's not the one mitigating factors that Mr. Law
put forth. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you going to spend any time on Evidence Rule 612?
I wasn't planning on it until about.
I just thought it was a very unique is not the word I want, but creative way to use 612, and I never seen it used this way, and I'm wondering what your answer would be, that cross-examination, or that the defendant, in fact, wanted to introduce the letter, or at least discuss the letter, on cross-examination when that happened.
It was used to refresh the recollection.
Isn't that what 612's for?
I believe so. I don't believe that 612 creates a relevance for that document. The relevance and divisibility come from other issues. And here, I believe what 612, I believe, says is you have to give it to the other side, which they did. And then it was the other side then that tried to put it before the jury. Two things. One is...
Wait. 612 doesn't say you give it to the other side. If it's exculpatory, you have to give it under Brady. If it's a statement after testimony, you got to give it under 16b1g. But if you're not prepared to go into that, it's fine. Because neither document, my concern is neither document was eventually admitted into evidence. And wouldn't 612 only apply if it were really admitted? If you haven't looked at it, I understand. It's a pretty lengthy case. Well, you want to go to propositional law number 6. I think they were admitted, but you probably need to check that later.
Okay. If they weren't admitted, they were not published in the contents of the jury.
In part. He asked the witness, as I recall it, to silently, whenever the objection was made, to silently read the letter and ask if there was any discrepancy in his testimony vis-a-vis the letter.
Right.
And he said no. Okay.
Given to jurors to guide them in deliberations and issues. I think it was particularly challenged the, we felt that on the issue of drugs, that the trial court raised the mitigating factor to a level of the defense to the crime from his discussion of that factor. We discussed that hypothesis too. The interesting thing is that the Court of Appeals, when it was discussing removing that assignment of error, began its discussion of that issue with a definition of mitigation that was very similar to what the jury, what we had proposed to the jury. And it seems to me that as lawyers, we need to have a clear definition of something in front of us before we start to apply that to the facts that the jury must need in that kind of definition. The court probably was unwilling to tell the jury what mitigating factors were, define such terms as, I believe, outweigh. So that the jury, I think, could have been expected that it had four definitions. And I think the absence of definition of mitigation in this case, given the open-endedness of the list of factors that they consider, is again, a definition opposed to the
proper definition. That's what you understand that your concern is not that the definition of mitigating factors was not inclusive enough to cover the things that were actually offered up as mitigation, but it's rather that the jury thought the level of mitigation evidence had to rise higher in order to impose the penalty. Is how it's weighed rather than the expanse or the universe of items that could be offered up?
I think that the definition that was given was the expansive definition. We didn't put it in the I also think that there are certain factors such as future dangerousness that reasonable jurors would say, well, that doesn't come under history, character, factor, defendant. But if it was excluded there, it could, it is the kind of evidence that the defendant is allowed to
use. Is the charge go into the jury? They're the charge with them.
I believe they did, but I'm not so sure.
Case is submitted, you have a good advisory opinion.